Sporty greetings once again to our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to another expanded 30-minute edition of the Sunny Side of Sports.
Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
The Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports.
The Sunny Side of Sports Show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
It's another big weekend in African football. We have semifinal action in the continent's two main club competitions, the CAF Champions League and the CAF Confederation Cup tournaments. In addition, top African football officials have been meeting this week at the new African Union headquarters in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. And on Saturday, they'll decide on future host countries of two Africa Cup of Nations tournaments, as we hear now from our Daybreak Africa sportsman, Mark Ouma.
The Confederation of African Football is set to name the successful bids to stage the 2019 and 2021 Orange Africa Cup of Nations tomorrow Saturday. Algeria, Cameroon, Guinea, Ivory Coast and Zambia are potential hosts for the two events. Meanwhile, Algeria's Entente Setif make their first appearance in the Orange African Champions League semifinal when they host the Democratic Republic of Congo's TP Mazembe in Setif. Tunisia's CS Sfaxien engage the Democratic Republic of Congo's AS Vita in Sfax in semi-final action tomorrow Saturday. Elsewhere, Ivory Coast's Sewe Sports is at home to the Republic of Congo's AC Leopards in Abidjan as Cameroon's Cotton Sport hosts Egypt's El Ahly in Garoua in the Orange Africa Confederation Cup semi-final. Meanwhile, based on recent Orange African Cup of Nations qualifiers, South Africa's Bafana Bafana is among teams that seem to have reversed their fortunes in African football, coming off a 3-0 away win against Sudan and for the first time snatching a point from Nigeria in their scoreless draw at home. Coach Ephraim Sheikhs Mashaba, who is back in charge of Bafana Bafana after a decade, reckons this is a sign of better things to come when playing Republic of Congo next month.
We can only hope it's a start of consistency in getting results, because it won't help us now. We're going back, we come back, we rusted and we don't do anything. I think, yes, I'd like to say it's a good start for the team and the country as a whole. Get to Congo, get another 3 points, then we are say we can cruise into the Africa Cup of Nations 2015.
That was Ephraim Sheikhs Mashaba, head coach of South Africa's Bafana Bafana, speaking in Cape Town, South Africa. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend.
Because this is Africa. Zamina, mina, eh, eh. Waka, waka, eh, eh. Zamina, mina, sakalewa. This time for Africa.
I'm very, 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 very excited. Ngijabulile.
Hola. Because this is Africa. Zamina, mina, eh, eh. It's time for Africa.
Hi, I'm Shegu Adeyemi, coming to you all the way from Lagos, Nigeria. Weekends are for sports. Nightline Africa Sports, that is. And every Sunday, I'll give you highlights of the top sports stories of the past week and the weekend. Nightline Africa Sports from the Voice of America. Let the games begin.
We got the game on.
This is for the world.
In basketball, my big story this week was the Olympic champion USA men's team winning its second consecutive world title. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, let's listen in again to my report on the Voice of America. Here's a Sunny Side of Sports salute to the USA men's basketball team, which successfully defended its world title in Spain. The Americans, who are also the reigning Olympic champions, spanked Serbia in the final in Madrid, 129-92. The young American squad had several big-name stars, including Kevin Durant, pull out before the tournament tipped off, but they dominated the competition. Their closest victory was by 21 points over Turkey. In the gold medal game, the USA got big performances from their backcourt of Kyrie Irving and James Harden. Irving had 26 points, while Harden added 23 points. Irving made all six of his three-point shots in the final and was named the FIBA Basketball World Cup's most valuable player.
You know, for me, it was just taking advantage of every opportunity I got with these guys, every opportunity I got with the coaches, just trying to learn from them as much as possible to take back to my team. And, you know, for me, it was just enjoying every single day because, you know, nothing was guaranteed. And, you know, regardless of what everyone said, you know, this one right here, it means a lot.
We heard Kyrie Irving talk about learning from his coaches on the USA's World Championship basketball team. The 22-year-old point guard for the NBA's Cleveland Cavaliers Club played in college at Duke University, where he was guided by Hall of Fame coach Mike Krzyzewski. Coach Krzyzewski is also the head coach of the USA's senior national team, and he's done an outstanding job winning the past two world titles and the past two Olympic titles. Coach K says while Kyrie Irving was an integral part of the USA's team, the Americans had a lot of weapons on their way to winning another gold medal.
I can't single out one guy because, you know, I mean, Kyrie was deserving of MVP, but I think you could look at our games and we had a different star each game. Klay Thompson was so critical for this team. DeMarcus tonight, James Harden, Anthony Davis, especially the start of our run. Kenneth, you know, gave us a lot of energy. So it was not like there was one star. They were just a championship team.
In winning another world championship, Coach K says the Americans are raising their game as international opponents continue to improve.
I think one of the reasons we've won is because we do have that respect. We know how good everyone is. It's beautiful basketball. We prepare like crazy, and we learn from the international community. We get better, and instead of saying, like, we already know how to play.
Now we'll hear from Coach K's counterpart on the silver medal-winning Serbian team, Saša Đorđević.
I'm really a happy person that I was on the side of those players. I learned a lot from them, and I tried to put my little part of a help to achieve this silver medal in the World Cup, which for us is big as gold. Nobody expected us, I believe. We were just growing up from the day one until now, and, you know, maybe the result here, we were all disappointed because players are competitors, we all are competitors, but we have to congratulate with the USA team. They were the best in this competition and they deserve this gold, and they really kicked our butt tonight.
This is Dikembe Mutombo. I am from Africa. Malaria kills thousands of children every day. Don't let your child be one of them. Make sure they sleep under a treated mosquito net. Beating malaria is like winning at basketball. You need to get to the net.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at voanews.com.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In more African football news, qualifying matches resume October 10th and October 11th for next year's Africa Cup of Nations tournament in Morocco. Remember, VOA football fans, 28 teams are competing for a place at Morocco 2015. Under the qualifying format, there are seven groups, A through G, of four teams each. Our African football guru, David Legg, joins us now for a look at the current group standings after two rounds of play.
Right, Sammy, we start with Group A, and on top are Congo Brazzaville, who weren't even supposed to be in the competition. They've got 6 points. South Africa have four. The defending champions, Nigeria, just 1 point, and Sudan, nil. Now, I mentioned Congo. They were eliminated by Rwanda in the final qualifying round, but the Congolese discovered that Rwanda had a player who used one name playing for Rwanda and another name playing for Vita Club in the Democratic Republic of Congo. So Rwanda were expelled. Congo come in, started with a great win in Nigeria, and then they beat Sudan at home. So they're off to a flying start. But despite the fact, Sonny, Nigeria have only got 1 point, I still believe that they will make it to Morocco for the finals. Part of the reason for that is that in October, there's a golden opportunity for the Super Eagles to get back sort of into flight. They've got Sudan home and away, and really the Nigerians should be looking at collecting maximum points from those games. The Sudanese side I saw, Sonny, playing South Africa in Khartoum is among the poorest from that country. I was really shocked. South Africa did play well, but their task was made so much easier by a really poor Sudanese side. Once they fell two goals behind after the hour mark, they just put up the white flag of surrender. So although it's early days, I believe Nigeria will qualify, and I feel that the two matches between Congo and South Africa are going to decide who accompanies the Super Eagles to the finals. No surprises, Sonny, at the top of Group B, Algeria, the best African team at the World Cup. They're out in front with 6 points. Mali and Malawi have got three each, and Ethiopia, nil. And this group going very much according to plan, and I'm quite confident that it's Algeria who will win it and Mali who will finish second. In Group C, Burkina Faso, really impressive. 6 points, Gabon, four, Lesotho, one, and Angola, nil. Now, Burkina Faso had what I would call a routine home victory over Lesotho, but then they hammered Angola 3-0 in Luanda. Now, I cannot remember, Sonny, offhand, when a team has last gone to Luanda and won so decisively. That was really impressive with the 2013 Africa Cup footballer of the tournament, Petra Uita, who plays his club football in France. He scored a brace. The Stallions of Burkina Faso are the clear favourites to win Group C. And with Angola doing so badly, you've got to feel, Sonny, that Gabon will accompany Burkina Faso to Morocco. On to Group D. I would describe this as the second group of death. And here we've also had a lot of turbulence with Cameroon decide to shame themselves and shamed Africa at the World Cup in Brazil. Very much a rehabilitated side, an away victory over DR Congo, and then a 4-1 spanking of Ivory Coast, Yaya Toure and all in Yaoundé. They're on top with 6 points. DR Congo and Ivory Coast have got three each, and Sierra Leone, who, of course, because of the Ebola crisis, cannot play any matches at home. They're clearly feeling the effects of this, and they're bottom pointless. Again, Sonny, it's early days, but with that great start by Cameroon and two games in October to come against Sierra Leone, they've got to be favourites to fill one of those two guaranteed places. And that means that the matches between DR Congo and Ivory Coast during October, they're almost eliminators. The side that gets the most points from those two games are likely to go through with Cameroon. On to Group E, again, a little bit of a surprise in that Uganda are on top of Ghana, admittedly only on goal difference. They've got 4 points each. Guinea have got three and Togo have got zero. The Ghanaians, after being held at home by Uganda, they did well, Sonny. They went to Lome and they beat Togo 3-2. And I'm still stunned at the fact that the reward for the coach, Kwesi Appiah, was the sack. Now, I know that the Ghanaians and Appiah said they departed by mutual consent, but as far as I know, Appiah had no immediate desires to leave the post. He must have been a very happy man when he left Lome with maximum points. But the knives had been out for some time against Appiah, and that wasn't helped by the home draw against Uganda. If Appiah was to go, really, it should have been after the World Cup. But what the Ghanaians did is just before the World Cup, they gave him a 2-year extension. And they said, quote, it was a vote of confidence. I suppose, Sonny, anybody who hears those infamous words knows that there is trouble ahead. It seems the more you get a vote of confidence, the more trouble you're in. But anyway, Ghana back on track. My feeling, Sonny, is they will make it through to Morocco. And it's probably now between Uganda and Guinea for the other qualifying place. On to Group F, and Cape Verde, who did well at the 2013 Cup of Nations as debutants, reaching the quarterfinals. They've made a great start. They won away in Niger, which was a good achievement, and they backed that up with a home victory over a misfiring Zambian side. And they're on top with 6 points. Mozambique have got 2 points. They will be a little bit disappointed in that they only drew with Niger in Maputo, having held Zambia in Zambia. The Zambians are struggling at the moment, just 1 point, and Niger have got 1 point each. But the fact that Mozambique were held at home, Sonny, means that it looks like Cape Verde, and then really take your pick from the other three, Mozambique, Niger, and Zambia, for who's likely to be the runners-up. And then Group G, the group of death, Senegal, a great start, 6 points. Tunisia, also 6 points. This is the only group where the two leading sides have got 6 points each. Botswana, a third with 0 points. And believe it or believe it not, bottom of the table, no points, no goals scored. The record, 7 times African champions, Egypt. Not entirely surprised, Sonny, that they lost in Senegal, but then at home to Tunisia. To me, that was a must-win match. But they went down 1-0, and I think the Egyptians have got a seriously stiff mountain to climb now. They're fortunate in a sense that they play Botswana twice in October. Botswana are, I believe, the weakest of the four teams. But the Egyptians are going to have to take maximum points from those two games and hope, against hope perhaps, that Senegal and Tunisia draw twice, because that would mean that they would have 8 points each and the Egyptians would be just 2 points behind. But whichever way you look at the maths in this group, Senegal and Tunisia are 6 points ahead of Egypt, and there are just 4 rounds left. And it's almost unthinkable, Sonny, that Egypt, who won in 2-6, 2-8, and 2-10, they failed to qualify in 2-12, they failed to qualify in 2-13, and now they're staring at the grim prospect of not qualifying for a third consecutive Africa Cup of Nations. That is bordering on the unbelievable.
In African club football, semifinal action kicking off this weekend in both the CAF Champions League and CAF Confederation Cup tournaments. Let's begin with the Champions League, David. And how about the fixtures?
Yes, Sonny, you've got Vita Club of Dior Congo at home to CS Sfaxien of Tunisia. And then you've got Anton Setif of Algeria at home to TP Mazembe of Dior Congo. Now, one thing we've never had, Sonny, in the Champions League is a final involving two clubs from the same country. We've come close a few times, and now we've got the possibility again because you've got Vita and Mazembe from the Dior Congo. Vita at home to Sfaxien, and the obvious instruction, Sonny, to any home team in the semifinals, I think there are two issues. Build a lead, and whatever you do, do not concede a goal at home, because these matches look pretty tight. And I wouldn't be surprised if a penalty shootout or the away goals rule proved decisive. Nevertheless, Sonny, I think the form teams are probably Sfaxien of Mazembe. And here we could also have history because last year, 2013, they met in the CAF Confederation Cup final with Sfaxien winning 3-2 on aggregate. And they are probably slight favourites to make it. So on consecutive years, they could meet in different CAF club competition finals. The first leg, Sonny, the Vita match is on Sunday. The Setif match is on Saturday. And then the following weekend, we'll have the second legs of both of those games. If we move on then to the CAF Confederation Cup, that's the second tier competition. the semi-final fixtures there, the first legs. Cotton Spore of Cameroon against the mighty Al Ahly of Egypt. And Sewe San Pedro of Ivory Coast against AC Leopards of Congo. And if that name rings a bell, it should, because in 2012, they were the shock winners of the CAF Confederation Cup. And similar to the Champions League, the first legs will be this weekend, and then there's very little time to recover because the following weekend, you'll have the return matches. Cotton Spore and Al Ahly, Sonny, they met last year in the Champions League semi-finals. 2-1 all draws, and then Ahly won on penalties. I think it's going to be pretty close again. The big problem for Ahly is a lack of goals. They've only scored 7 in 8 matches in the competition. But I would make them slight favourites to go through. And then in the other semi-final, goals are absolutely no problem at the moment for AC Leopards. They've scored 4 in each of their last 2 games. And in Kader Bidimbu, they have an 18-year-old who has scored 6 of those goals. So he's a clear danger man. I would make them also, Sonny, slight favourites against Sewe. So I'm looking at a possibility of an Al Ahly AC Leopards final. That would be a really attractive climax to the CAF Confederations Cup. I've had quite a few emails, Sonny, asking me about prize money in these competitions. If you win the Champions League, you get $1.5 million American dollars. That's a lot of money by African standards. And not only that, Sonny, you also go to the FIFA Club World Cup in Morocco in December, where you're guaranteed at least another $1.5 million. So there's a sort of add-on for the winners of the CAF Champions League. And then if we switch to the CAF Confederation Cup, the winners get $660,000.
Thanks, David. That's our African football guru, David Legg, speaking with us once again from Johannesburg, South Africa. Just ahead, VOA's Downtown Brown will have our English Premier League football question of the week.
Hey, I'm VOA's Downtown Brown, and here we are again with Question of the Week. And the question was, who do you think will score their first goal of the season, Drogba or Yaya Toure? Since they're both playing each other this Sunday, September 21st, and check your local listings for the time. So we have a tie on the top comment on Question of the Week, and one goes out to Paul Onidika from Enugu, Nigeria, who said, the game will be a hard one, but Sonny, I'm giving that game to Man City, and Yaya will score his first. And another one goes to Shabogo De Striker from Nigeria, who said, Sonny, I'm a Chelsea fan, and we're going to beat Man City 3-1. And I see Double D scoring his first goal if he plays. Injury news. Drogba is going to be back from his foot injury. Fernando will be out with his groin injury. Here in the studio, we have two soccer analysts, Tef Tef and Peter Claudi. Welcome, you guys.
Thank you.
So first question goes to both you guys. Who do you think is going to win the match, Chelsea or Man City?
Well, for me, it's very difficult to say at the moment. Man City appears to have a very good team at the moment. However, Chelsea is 100% now. It's too early to see which team is at the top at the moment, although both teams have very strong players in them. I would not be surprised if it's a draw. Although some experts I've heard give Chelsea a slight advantage, I am not too sure about that. But it remains to be seen who comes on top.
I would give this one to Chelsea, like you said, only because they have a great start. City have already shown that they can be exploited. They lost to Stoke City, and they tied Arsenal. If you're a title contender, you cannot, you know, be leading 1-0 and then go down 2 and finally make it up off, you know, some weak defending. If City loses this game, I think it's going to put a huge question mark on their potential to win this league. So, again, that's the only upside they have, is that they have to win this game. So this could be the strongest City team you'll see.
So do you think Yaya Toure is going to be the X factor for Man City, or do you think Drogba coming in as a sub will be the X factor for Chelsea?
Now, since the World Cup, Yaya Toure has not particularly sparked like he did last year. We've not seen much of him. He has yet to show how dangerous he has always been for now. So one has to be a little bit cautious about how they will perform. Now, on the Ivorian team, Drogba was the captain. Now it appears that Yaya Toure is now going to be the captain. There were all these allegations that there was an attempted coup in camp, so to speak, to get Drogba out and make Yaya Toure. You know, there are kind of political machinations going on. But, you know, when it comes to the English League, Drogba has ruled many more years in the EPL than Yaya Toure. Drogba, as somebody would say, is now a grandfather in football by now. I mean, when you hit 35, 36, absolutely. I mean, you're almost out of the door. So it's on his last leg to lead out. Yaya Toure doesn't have that many years either. So we'll see how that plays out.
I mean, first of all, if a goal comes, I think it's going to come from Drogba because obviously he's up front. Although Yaya Toure was, to me, better than Suarez last year. As far as he should have got the player of the year because they ended up winning the title. At the same time, he has not been happy since their last campaign with how he's been treated. So I don't know if that plays a role into how he's been doing so far. But I think he'll have a good year. I don't think he'll be as good as last year. But he will have a good year. And you've also seen that when Yaya Toure is not there, City become, you know, an okay team.
So what is your guys' predictions for Sunday's match?
Well, for now, I think I might go in for a draw, although Chelsea could pull a fast one. Now, let us not forget that City playing at home, so they might have a home advantage. But you never know sometimes. Stoke went there and gave City a bloody nose. You never know what.
Exactly. What about you?
I think just like any big game between these two guys, it'll come down to one moment of brilliance or mess up. And that's what happened last year. Hart messed up in extra time, I think, almost, and Chelsea took a 2-1 win. I think it will come down to the same thing this year. So if there's a blowout, I'd be surprised. So I think it can be a very, very tight game or a draw at best.
All right. Hey, thank you guys for joining today on VOA's Downtown Brown. And that's the sunny side of sports.
And VOA's Downtown Brown will have another English Premier League football question for us next week. Turning to tennis, Chinese star Li Na has retired from the sport at the age of 32 because of nagging knee injuries. Li announced the news Friday, ending a week of intensifying speculation that she would announce her retirement ahead of a new women's tennis tournament in Wuhan, China, her hometown. Li Na is credited with taking tennis in Asia to a new level with her success in the women's game. Li won the 2011 French Open, becoming the first player from China to win a Grand Slam singles title. And earlier this year in Melbourne, Li Na won her second Grand Slam singles title at the Australian Open. Li entered only 7 tournaments after that, though, and she hasn't played since a third-round defeat at Wimbledon. Li withdrew from 3 tournaments in August, including the U.S. Open, citing a right knee injury. In a statement, Li said, and I quote, "Most people in the tennis world know that my career has been marked by my troubled right knee. After 4 knee surgeries and hundreds of shots injected into my knee weekly to alleviate swelling and pain, my body is begging me to stop the pounding." During her career, Li Na won 9 titles on the Women's Tennis Association Tour and almost $17 million in prize money. Here's a sunny side of sports salute to the retiring Li Na, a true beacon for tennis players in China and throughout Asia. And that wraps up another expanded 30-minute edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America engineer Audrius Regis for his technical support on the program. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the sunny side of sports.
Tizi, c'est son agotiba. Tizi, anzoniye, ma.